The Capital Area Dental Society brings to you The Drill Down. We're your hosts, Dr. Shweta Ramanathan and
Sarah Carter.
Today, we're thrilled to have an incredibly insightful guest joining us, Tim Otto. Tim is a dynamic entrepreneur and practice leader who brings a fresh perspective to dentistry. With a background in finance and management, Tim transitioned into the dental world through experience, vision, and marriage. He's the co-founder of Alkin Dental Cooperative, a growing pediatric dental group that's redefining what it means to provide high-quality, community-focused care. From building systems at scale, creating a values-driven culture, to understanding the real power of branding, Tim doesn't just talk about innovation, he lives it. Whether it's navigating Google reviews, empowering associates to build their own personal brands, or leveraging AI-driven tools, Tim has turned challenges into opportunities. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you for the wonderful introduction. I appreciate you having me.
You're not a dentist.
I am. In fact, I have a business card that says not a dentist on it.
That's what I've heard.
Like to make the joke, chauvinism is still alive and well in Texas. Nothing against our state. But when we first built our practice, Alex would be in full scrubs, like holding a dental drill over a patient. And I'd be dressed like a scrub, and the vendors would walk up to me and go, Dr. Otto. And I'd go, actually, that's Dr. Alexandra Otto over there. So not a dentist, and never have claimed to be, although I have put stitches in a friend's leg at one point. So I could qualify as a
There's your claim to fame.
Yeah. See, I think I'm going to steal that for my business card, because as executive director of CADS, sometimes people assume I am, or, you know, I basically say I'm not a dentist. I just play one on TV. So
love it. Yep. Love it.
Okay. Right. So why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about what you do at Alkin and how that's maybe different today than it was when you guys first started?
Yeah, absolutely. So Alkin Dental Cooperative is an extension of our group pediatric practice that we started back in 2020. Long story, and well, I'm sure we'll get to it at some point, but essentially what we realized is that in the market, there was two ways for pediatric dentists to go about doing their business. It was either to go it alone and struggle immensely under the pressures of increased competition, decreased pay, all of that fun stuff, or they had to sell to a DSO. And so as Alex and I were growing our group practice that we owned 100% of, we had a lot of friends coming to us and asking if we could help them. And based on where we were at the time in our philosophy, we kept saying, no, 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 it's not what we do. It's not what we're building. And eventually one of our good friends said, well, fine, then I'm at my wit's end. I have to sell to a DSO, and sold to a DSO. Long story short, DSO didn't follow through on all its promises, and it created a really bad situation for our friends. So when we saw that, that was kind of the breaking point. And we said, okay, we've got to now take this organization that we've scaled and put these processes and systems in place to help us grow and figure out a way to help other pediatric dentists do that. So at Alkin Dental Cooperative, we call ourselves a dental partnership organization. And what we do is we partner or affiliate with other doctors who own their practices or are starting their own practice and put these world-class systems in place that we've developed over the years. Everything from HR, payroll management, revenue cycle management, and just the general nitty-gritty of operating a pediatric dental practice. So that's what we do. We went to market with Alkin about 2 years ago, and we will have 16 locations by the end of this year.
Tim, that's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah, but it's been a lot of fun.
Why don't we back up a little bit and tell all of the listeners why you are the rock star you are? Where did you start out, and how did Alex convince you to leave that amazing career? Like, where did this career start, and how do you have all this knowledge?
When it comes to like band and musical metaphors, I'm the bass player. Alex is the rock star. She's the front
right.
man.
Right.
So I have kind of a fun story. So when I was in high school, started a landscaping company. It was actually a lawn care company. that blossomed into a landscape company. And eventually at the age of 25, I had 30 employees. We were one of the larger ones in the state of Colorado, had every 25-year-old's dream, big house, couple of Porsches in the garage, and was absolutely burnt out. So
wow.
Ended up selling the company through an M&A firm in Colorado, and I went back to college at the age of 25. And wow. I wanted to have the full college experience because I never got to have that. So joined a fraternity. They called me Uncle Tim, and
wow.
the whole college experience.
And this was your bachelor's at 25?
This is bachelor's at 25. Yeah,
wow.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So,
wow.
So it was fun. And, you know, going back to college at that advanced age, I think I got a lot more out of it than I might have had I gone at 18.
Yeah.
Double majored in finance and management, and then went on to earn my international MBA from University of Denver.
Okay.
At that time, Alex was doing her first residency as a GPR, or her GPR residency at Denver Health. And so we met, and things just kind of went from there. My career moved us to Texas because I went into corporate America after school, or actually even during school, and was running distribution nationally for a Fortune 500 company, traveling 200 days a year and kind of living the corporate life. And really kind of the tipping point that made us think, well, we want to do something different, is we have a friend who's actually our godchildren. We're best friends with him. He was the best man at our wedding. And he was COO of a major company, multi-billion-dollar company, and he would leave his children on Sunday night and be gone for the week and fly home Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
Week in, week out. That was his life. Mm-hmm. And we saw that we didn't want that. So Alex sat me down one day. I was climbing the corporate ladder. She was working in corporate dentistry down in Dallas, had all the trappings of that life, big house again. Find myself with big houses and fast cars through multiple points throughout my career, apparently. But the best part about it was she's a planner, as you guys know. Mm-hmm. And so when I got home, she poured me a glass of bourbon and sat me down and had like a 12-page Prezi presentation. If you guys remember Prezi,
yeah,
right?
I do.
Canva,
yeah.
And said, hey, this is where I want to go. This is how I want to build this organization, and here's how we can keep you engaged, because she knew that I'm very type A and have to have a lot on my plate in order to be happy. And so the goal was always to build this group practice. So how are you going to say no to that as a husband? So we literally both quit our corporate jobs. I left corporate America, sold everything we owned, and moved into an RV and headed up to Alaska for her pediatric residency. And that's really where it all started. So fun little side note, because everybody always asks, Alcan is named after the Alaska Canada Highway.
Oh,
which is
no
where
way.
This whole
wow.
Together started.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Very cool.
Now it all makes sense.
So I know Alcan is technically a DPO model, and a lot of what we're really familiar with are DSOs, or just like the traditional DSO model. And can you tell me a little bit about how a DPO is different than a DSO?
Yep. It's mainly the ownership structure. And I've written a couple of newsletters on this, right? You always go to these trade shows and you'll see these DSOs advertising themselves as doctor owned and doctor led. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, they're just paying lip service to that concept. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, if it's not doctor owned at least 51% or more, then it's not doctor owned. It's investor owned with
right.
some doctors as minority equity partners in it. So that's mm-hmm. the biggest difference, is we provide all of the support services with the same level of sophistication and expertise that larger DSOs do. We are bespoke to the pediatric industry. We do not work with GPs. We don't work with perio. We firmly believe that running a pediatric practice has its own challenges and is its own unique type of practice. So we only partner with pediatric practices, and our partner doctors own the majority of their practices. So gotcha. They do not give up control. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we can give them recommendations. We own and operate our own practices so we can tell them what we do and we can share best practices throughout the group. But at the end of the day, the decision is theirs as to how they want to move forward. So that's one unique part of it. The other unique part is we are not planning on selling in 5 years. We're not planning on, we're not trying to put together a bunch of practices, roll them up and sell them and cash out and ride happily off into the sunset. We're building an organization that is sustainable long after Alex and I exit the picture. So in 15 or 20 years, when that next generation of doctors has joined Alcan and they're ready to take over, Alcan continues in perpetuity as a doctor-led organization, no private equity involved. So that's unique. And it's also the more difficult way of doing things, but it's, in Alex's, my opinion and our partner's opinions, it's the best thing for the industry. It's the best thing for the patients and it's the best thing for the owner doctors.
Yeah. And it's really just that marrying the, I guess, quite literally the best of both worlds. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk to you a lot about like the operations side of Alcan and then, you know, subsequently Kids Tooth Team. And I want to ask you about hiring and like creating a good culture, especially in like a modern work environment. So when you're looking to make these hires, especially your colleagues, like the people that are your office managers, the people that are reporting to you, what are you looking for in a new hire beyond just like skills and experience?
Culture is everything. Cultural fit is what we hire for first, second, and third. We've invested a tremendous amount of money in our training program. We have a director of training at Alcan. We can train anybody, but you can't train attitude. You can't train having a great smile or wanting to be of service to people. So, and that applies to every position from the janitor all the way up to the pediatric dentist, right? If you don't have that servant leadership mindset and the core values that we abide by, putting the patient first, things like that, there's nothing that we can do for you. So first and foremost, we hire for culture.
And like your experience with that, your company before you went to college, your lawn care company where you were hiring and creating your own team, how do you feel like you use those skills to now turn around and implement them at Alcan? I know those are different fields, but some of the managing of people, still finding a culture fit, I'm sure those things translate.
Yeah, I'll give you a soundbite here, and it's your gut is never wrong when it comes to people. It's just never wrong. And I mean, I've hired and fired hundreds, if not 1,000 people. And every time I've made a mistake in hiring and I look back and I go, yeah, I made the decision because, you know, on paper, it looked good. Although I knew when I met them, it wasn't the right person. And I was hoping that they would be different.
Yeah.
Nope. My gut was always right. And the interesting thing is that's not unique to me. It's not like I have this superpower. Every one of my folks that is in charge of hiring people, when I ask them when they make a bad hire, well, what did your gut tell you at the time? And they go, yeah, I just wasn't quite sure about him or her, but it seemed, you know, like I needed to fill the spot at the time, or I thought maybe they'd be different once they got in. The gut is always correct. So, you know, a person can look great on paper and you can be desperate, which a lot of folks are in the dental industry right now, right?
Yeah.
But however their first impression is, guess what? That's how the team is going to feel about them. That's how your patients are going to feel about them. And ultimately, that's what's going to be reflected in your customer and patient experience. So
that's true.
Yeah.
How do you approach training and retaining team members once you've hired them, once you've found a good fit? Now it's, you know, especially when you're growing as fast as you are, with the 16 different practices, we want to make sure that we're also able to keep team members, especially the ones that have helped create this culture at Alcan.
Yeah, 100%. So there's a lot that goes into that. Obviously compensating fairly, making sure that your team is entitled to the same benefits that your doctors are, right? So we offer, Alex and I are on the same insurance that our team is on, right? Okay. We have the same pay policy as all of our doctors do. So anything that is good for the goose is good for the gander, or whatever, however that saying goes.
Yeah.
that's how it should be. It's that servant leadership. So making sure your team is fairly and accurately compensated, making sure that they have the basics and all of that. But, you know, most people go, oh, well, they need a dollar an hour raise. And in any study that they show you in college, pay comes in third.
Okay.
On the level of importance to employees, it's being feeling like they are wanted and being given the tools that they need to excel at their job are first and second, right? Okay. So if you create that environment, you allow them to do that and you don't micromanage them, they're going to be happy and they're going to perpetuate that culture. If you micromanage them, you know, you can give somebody $40 an hour as an assistant, but if
you're not hovering.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of it. And then from a training standpoint, boy, that's something that Alex and I have personally spent $250,000 on over the past 2 years solving for, because there really is no good solution in the dental industry today. So we actually hired an outside adult education theory expert to come in with his team and develop training process based on adult education theory for the dental industry. And that's been a really fun 2 year process. And we're still probably 6 months away from having that perfected.
Yeah.
God, it's tough to train on your own. It's tough to find the time and the people to do that.
Do you think because dentistry, especially the like admin side and the staff support staff side, that's not quite as standardized as maybe it is in medicine with like your mid-level providers? They have a lot more of a tiered structure than we do.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think dentistry in general, the lack of standardization. I mean, the what's the joke? You can go into five dentists and you'll get six different treatment plans.
Right. Yeah.
I think that makes it very difficult for an employee to
trust, to
know what's good, right? And then I also think there's, you know, I don't mean to diminish the role of doctors in this thing, but I think we've put dentists on a pedestal for so long and made them the moon and the stars in the dental practice, and all of the support team, as we call them, was just that. It was supporting actors and supporting staff, right?
Right.
And in reality, we know that in order to make a great patient experience, everybody has an equally significant role to play.
Yeah.
And I think
correct. Yeah.
The more that we adopt that mindset as an industry, the better off our people are going to be. We're not there yet. I want to make dentistry a career, not a job, right? Dental assisting as a career.
Right.
Hygienist as a career, right? Mm-hmm. Right now we view those as jobs, and at certain age, they're going to rotate out and go find something else.
Like a stepping stone almost.
Exactly right.
Right. At Alcan and Kids Tooth Team, I guess I'll just together or separately, I guess, how have you and Alex developed core values? And are they different with Alcan versus Kids Tooth Team, since that's more the practice aspect of the cooperative?
Yeah, no, core values are literally everything. And the first thing that we do with new hires is we have a core value handbook, an employee guide, core value guide that lists our core values. And it's longer than most, so I'm not going to recite them all here, but everyone we go through our new hires and we say, these are our core values. Mm-hmm. You are going to screw up. You're going to make mistakes. As long as you made those mistakes in the spirit of these core values and kept those in your mind when you were making that decision, right or wrong, you'll always be fine here. The minute you violate one of those core values, you're gone, you're done. And we live by that. And there's certain business decisions that we have made that have been not the best from a business standpoint, but they followed our core values. So not just having them as, you know, again, something that you post on the wall, but actually having them at the center of your business and making decisions based on those has made a dramatic impact as to the direction of this organization.
How did you and Alex come up with these core values? Was that another Prezi presentation between the two of you?
I mean, I'm telling you, if I say we spent hundreds of hours thinking about these and you know, you start with a list of about 200 and then start narrowing them down further and further, that's how much time we spent on putting those values into place, because we always knew that it would grow into something like this, and we didn't want to put these into place at 15 practices, right? Mm-hmm. Because at that point, then you'd probably make some different decisions than you would had you had those core values in place. So,
for sure.
A lot of research. And, you know, the cool thing is most companies are super proud of their core values. We are mm-hmm. as well. It's not like a mm-hmm. secret. So you can go on, you can Google Netflix's core values. You can mm-hmm. Google, there's some great core values in a lot of software companies. Mm-hmm. Phoenix Contact, the company that I ran distribution for, has great core values. So do a lot of research and find out what's important to other companies, and then put your own personal spin on things mm-hmm. and then put it at the center of everything you do.
I really mm-hmm. like that. And then it's also very clear to all of your other employees, because you really have it laid out in a handbook, and it's, you can't miss it. So I like that.
Exactly,
you
know, yeah.
I like that.
And if you get fired, people are all like, ooh, that was rule number seven. That's, yeah, no surprise.
They're wallpapered in the waiting room. I don't know how you missed rule number seven.
That's after the ice cream shop. I think that's the next venture.
That's right.
Yep. So no, you kind of touched on this already, which was how sometimes the rest of the support team can view some of these dental positions as a stepping stone to something else. And that really brings me to talk about team turnover and how we can decide as owners, as, you know, when you're running Alcan, how do you decide when it's time to let go or hold on to an employee?
Yeah. We call it freeing up their future.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
We'll be out with merch.
That's actually a quote from my friend Steve Anderson. So I want to give credit where credit's due.
Okay. Thanks.
You know, it's a Steve Anderson, Tim Otto.
Yeah, that's right. Like... That's right. How do you decide when to retain or let go of a team member? Again, I mean, unless you have really sophisticated advanced metrics, which we are just now able to deploy to give objective ratings in the practice, mm-hmm. it's very difficult to make that decision. And I think that decision has to be made on a cultural level more than anything in your standard one location practice, mm-hmm. right? Is are they showing up on time every day? Are they bringing their best self? Are they working to contribute towards the team? Or they're working against the team. We have fired some of the best dental assistants that Alex has ever worked with. Mm-hmm. And she's worked in 50 offices across the country. Mm-hmm. And they were the best while they were working for us. Mm-hmm. But culturally,
yeah,
they were working against the team, and they were not trying to build others up, and they had to go. Right.
Talk to me a little bit about how those conversations go. I think that's really hard to handle as anyone in a leadership or managerial position.
Yeah. Not everyone has a Tim.
Yeah.
So. Not yet.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the best thing is to, if you're going to make that decision, you have made the decision. Number one, don't wait on it. Mm-hmm. It's just drawing it out for everybody is bad for the team, bad for the employee, bad for you. So schedule the time on Friday afternoon, the last day, and sit them down and just honestly lay it out and say, hey, it's clear that this is not working out. We have decided to go our separate ways. We wish you all the best, and we'll have everything, last paycheck and everything ready for you. This is the direction we have decided on.
No, I guess I mean more like if they are a good culture fit, but there are just some things in their job description that they're not quite hitting, and it's maybe slowing down the process. How are you having, before, I guess, you're terminating someone?
Yeah,
are
absolutely.
You having those in between conversations of like, you know, you don't want to sound micromanagey. Everyone wants to be everyone's friend, but at some point you've got to kind of be like, hey, this is what we talked about, and we're not seeing this. And so how do you bridge that gap?
Yeah, I mean, so that is also a very difficult question, because it's kind of like I went to management school for 6 years and learned how to be a manager, that'd be like me asking a dentist, hey, how do you do that MOD composite? Show me real quick. Just give me a 2 minute, you know, like it doesn't work like that. So the best thing I could do, and I know that you guys wanted a book recommendation. This is not my, the one that I had in mind, but I'll tell you right now, don't just read the book, but live by it in the dental practice, Crucial Conversations. And that book is so seminal in being able to empower you to have those conversations with a team member in a frank and unbiased and unemotional manner, right? So the key is have honest conversations, don't make it emotional, and have them immediately.
Okay.
If you see something that is annoying you or that you want to change that behavior, don't wait until 3 weeks ago now and or 3 weeks from now and say, hey, remember that thing you did that really pissed me off? Right? Go, hey, with a bit of positive criticism, constructive feedback, whatever you want to call it, when you're handing me those instruments, don't hand them to me needle first. Like, address the issue right there. That's, it's always best to make minor course corrections versus waiting for quarterly reviews or monthly meetings or something like that. That's what we do in the industry. It's what I see a lot of people doing in the industry is, oh, we'll talk about that at our next monthly meeting.
I'll make a mental note and bring it up later. Yeah.
Like, okay, well then it just seems like a data dump and then it becomes the emotional issue, right? Where if you get
what you, we were trying to avoid.
Constant feedback, then that's great. And then you can put a framework around it and all that fun stuff. Again, most single location practices won't get to that point. So implementing some core ideas like crucial conversations, radical candor is another great one, will help immensely with the single location doctor in management.
Scaling Up was another book that you referenced at one of our earlier conversations. And I wanted to, I want you to explain to me how you've used that in terms of practice hiring.
Yeah. And it's, you know, even in the single location practice, I think it still has value in an organization like ours where, you know, are we going to hire a CPA next or are we going to hire a director of marketing next, right? It really allows you to look at what is truly needed rather than what you feel like during the day or what your team member is saying, we need another team member. We need another this, we need another that, right?
Yeah.
Everybody needs more assistance. I don't care. You could have 200 dental assistants in a 5-chair practice and the doctor go, we're running behind because you said, I need another assistant. So you can use that same framework in a single location practice to say, okay, where actually is the bottleneck? Where is that happening? And what would our next logical hire be if all of these other things were perfect? If the training was in place, if we had the systems in place and the process in place, what do we really need? Is it another assistant or is it another, is it a treatment coordinator? Right. So
just organizing your thoughts.
Right. And then the thing that it does is it forces you to put it on paper and then stick to it. Right.
Right. Process.
Yeah.
So now we want to ask you what I'm sure every listener wants to know, since Alex has also been on one of our episodes of the, of this podcast, is the pros and cons of working with family.
Oh man.
Hold nothing back. We can't divulge that.
And we're not going to tell you what Alex said. So
Nope.
Good. I love my wife.
There's the sound bite
right there. There's the t-shirt.
You know, I, in all honesty, we are so incredibly fortunate because our skill sets are so vastly divergent that there's little room for friction. There's very little crossover, right? I can't step on her toes because I have no idea what she does. And vice versa, she has no idea where we bank. I could disappear to Mexico tomorrow. And
so, good to know. I'll make a mental note.
But what I will say, especially when it comes to being married to your partner, but it doesn't matter. Like a business partnership is marriage no matter what. So like we work with some doctors who are partners together. And it's kind of funny because it's like, well, when's the last time you guys had an evening out, right? Or when was the last time you went and drank beer with your business partner and talked about the things you talked about before you were business partners?
Yeah.
Life and kids and fun stuff. And
yeah,
the answer is never. Like, it is, this is how it has to be. It's all consuming, right? It was single location isn't that way. Single location, you can still have a work-life balance. But man, if you're building a group or you're starting to go down the multiple location path, that's it. That's what you've signed up for. I joke about it and I say, I still remember to this day, the last time that Alex and I think we went 3 hours without talking about the business. And that was in a hot tub in Costa Rica in 2021. And the bartender was making really, really good drinks.
Wow. Wow.
What do you think, I guess, what did you think about before going into business together? And kind of almost a lateral question, what should people think about, associates maybe think about before they partner with someone to make sure it's a good personality fit? I mean, not every husband and wife or best friend is meant to work together, you know? And yeah, how do you make that decision so that you can have a good relationship?
It's a great, great question. And I think I can answer it with think about yourself first. Right. And what do you truly want? Because when we talk to folks, even when we go around and we do lectures for like ASDA and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and it's fun talking to the students and they're, you know, hearing their hopes and dreams and then crushing them.
It's all right.
You know, what do you want? Oh, I want to own my practice for work-life balance, ton more money, and to mm-hmm. leave a legacy to somebody else. It's yep. like, well, those three things won't happen. Like, just mm-hmm. assume that they won't happen unless you're going and working in a small town or somewhere that most dentists coming out of school don't want to be at. So, mm-hmm. so why are you really doing this? And are you willing to make that sacrifice and do what it takes to, okay. to go into business, right?
Yeah.
Understanding that it's the most difficult thing, hands down, you'll ever do. We're parents of a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old mm-hmm. and man, they're easy.
Yeah.
They're super easy compared to running a business. Mm-hmm. Everybody can raise kids. Not many people can run a business, right? There's mm-hmm. your proof right there. Mm-hmm. So I always say, ask yourself first what you want, be honest with yourself. And if your answer is the same as your potential and prospective business partner, then you have a foundation. You have something that can work with. Also, the same thing that I was just talking about. The only successful partnerships that I have come across in mm-hmm. my business career are ones where the partners have divergent skill sets.
Okay.
Two doctors have the same skill sets in everything, mm-hmm. and both of them don't know how to balance a checkbook. Mm-hmm. Is that really a great partnership, or are you just doing split time so you don't have to be in the chair 4 to 5 days a week?
Yeah. Yeah.
So all things to consider. But yeah, partnership is such a, it's kind of like the mergers and acquisitions craze of the 80s and 90s, and that's mm-hmm. leaked into the DSO craze now. Mm-hmm. Most of them don't work.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Most
when,
of the
you know, when all else fails, we can always book a trip to Costa Rica.
exactly right.
Well, okay, well, let's diverge from that hot tub and let's take an inflection point here and really reflect back. And if we could ask you first, just a little tiny piece of wisdom during this whole culture journey that you've been on and this, you know, all of your lessons learned with hiring and firing and values, you know, what has worked well so far? What hasn't? Kind of what's your biggest mistake? What did you learn?
Yeah, we've made a lot of mistakes and we've had a lot of missteps. And I think that's a great question. I've never been asked that before.
The drill down exclusive, you guys.
Exactly. Yeah, it is, right? Chalk one up for
that
us.
That is. That's really.
You know, it takes a big person to admit mistakes. And this is your moment. This is it.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've made mistakes with people. We've made mistakes mm-hmm. with business strategy. Okay. Here's a good one for me. And this is just like, this is what I predicated a lot of the early business plans on, was that, doctors were completely interchangeable. I literally thought coming into the industry is like, man, we put the systems in place, we put the right support team in place, we put everybody else in place, we can swap doctors out like they're Pez.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, let me tell you how wrong I was, right? Mm-hmm. And I learned that early on, but it caused like, okay, now we've got to go back and like change the entire business model.
Mm-hmm.
To
Can you say a little bit more about that, the doctor, the interchangeability part, or like what you thought was that like practice philosophy you thought was going to be the same between a lot of doctors, like in what sense?
Totally. Like I thought we were gonna be able to standardize everything. I thought, you know, the dentist who gets trained at the residency program up in Philadelphia is getting the same information and the same chair time as the doctor who's doing the academic based program in University of Colorado, right?
Okay.
And again, like I'm sure all the doctors are like, "Well, you idiot! Of course that's not the way." We are.
We didn't say that, Tim.
Yeah, no.
Nope.
And I appreciate that. That's
And Alex didn't either when we asked her that question, so don't worry.
So yeah, for me that was a big aha moment, and I don't know. I'd be interested to hear what Alex's was. I know that we've had several together, but also I think you guys just hit on it too, like being able to admit that you're wrong as early as possible, and then go and take a completely different path based on that instead of clinging to I'm right, I'm going to make this right. And you know, look at that. We just watched, did you guys watch the Titan thing on Netflix?
Oh no.
Oh my God.
I was thinking about the football movie.
The submarine.
Oh, I remember the Titans.
The submarine. Yeah, I watched that.
Like, talk about the perfect example of a guy who's so entrenched in his beliefs and convictions that even like the data was saying that the system that he installed that said this sub is going to explode told them the sub is going to explode.
Yes.
And he's like, nope, I know it's not.
Yeah.
I know it's not. Right.
Just like, the hubris there's a getting lot in the of way.
People that are like that in business and in dentistry and in life.
Yes.
The quicker that you can. Yeah, get away from that ego and
ego.
Yeah, I definitely screwed that one up.
let's
go back and figure this out.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I don't think Alcan has anything to do with the implosion like the Titan submarine. So that's a good transition point. So let's talk about something that kind of is a big stumbling block for a lot of people right now. Marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is sort of the foundation of a lot of brands, and branding work is important at the beginning. And so I kind of wanted to pick your brain about that aspect so we can help existing practices, new dentists, you know, everything is changing daily, algorithms, everything like that. So maybe let's go back to the beginning. Let's really see if we can get some of that business school degree knowledge out of you. Yeah. And let's talk about branding and the messaging process that you went through at the beginning of building sort of the parent brand of Alcan and then Kids Tooth Team falling under that. Talk to us about, did you hire a firm? Did you already have that because you're Tim and you knew how to do it all? start there maybe.
Yeah, that's a great question. So actually the Kids Tooth Team brand came before anything. Alcan followed. Kids Tooth Team is what we started with. And yeah, it's a great question because even with me going to school, like, look, everybody's like, well, you went to business school, you're a marketer. Mm-hmm, and it's like, well, no, that would be like you majored in marketing. I majored in finance and management.
Mm-hmm.
And so even I know that I don't have that skill set that my marketing brethren do. And so we hired a firm to help us, right? And we had the concept. The first thing you do is develop your brand voice. What do you want it to be?
Mm-hmm.
We wanted ours to be a whimsical mix of, look, we're pediatric dental practice, which doesn't have to be formal, but also we don't want it to be goofy and childish, right?
So,
What does your patient avatar look like? Well, are you going to be serving Medicaid children? Are you going to be serving really high-end suburban population? Are you going to be serving the urban population, right?
Mm-hmm.
So formulating what your patient avatar is going to be, which then let's take one step further back. Where are you going to practice? Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, is the most important marketing decision you can make, hands down, bar none, when starting a practice, right? If you want to make $1 million as a dentist, you move out to West Texas, you move out to the plains of Eastern Colorado, you move to where nobody else is and you open a practice, you'll make $1 million and not even have to run SEO ads. If you want to struggle mightily and then eventually sell, then move to Austin, move to Dallas, move to Denver, where you can spend $10,000 a month on marketing and still only get 30 new patients a month. So location, 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 just like in real estate, that, that also holds true for the dental practice. Branding, hire a company.
Okay.
Clip
was that something you did early on? Like that was one of the first things you did, was bring on someone to work on the branding? Or
yeah, we had Kids Tooth Team. We had the brand figured out a year and a half before we opened our first location.
Okay.
Like that's how much went into it. And by the way, when we talk about marketing, people always say, well, marketing, we're doing SEO, we're doing pay-per-click advertising, we're doing Facebook. Those are all tactics, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the B school stuff, right? Business school stuff. Marketing is.
And tell me what SEO is.
Oh,
search engine optimization.
Search engine optimization.
Okay. Pop quiz.
So that is what, like,
I'm the only dentist here. So
Boy, doesn't that feel weird to be outnumbered? This is the first one.
Right? Like, yeah.
Usually me. It's usually me.
I know. I was like, wait.
Yeah.
Okay.
But having a marketing strategy is what dental practices need. And if you don't have that, like, hey, here's how we're going to approach SEO, pay-per-click advertising, paid social ads, organic social ads, boots on ground marketing, print marketing, all of that stuff has to play well together, right? Mm-hmm. And it has to wrap around a cohesive strategy. If you decide to just go out and spend $1,000 on SEO, right? Or pay-per-click advertising on Google to see how it works. Well, guess what? Mm-hmm. It's probably not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's not part of an overall strategy. So, so that's where a marketing firm can help. And everybody's like, well, it costs a lot of money. Like, okay, well, how much money is it costing having empty chairs?
Right.
So that's it. We use, by the way, I'll shout out Wondrous Agency. We've been with them for, 7 years now since we started.
Okay.
And they've grown and evolved with us. We've both grown as companies together, and they've done great. So anybody's looking for just a straight up recommendation, as long as they keep their service levels with us up and they, you know, we're still the number one, then go to Wondrous.
Okay. We heard it here first.
That's right. That's right.
So when you have Kids Tooth Team came first before Alcan, and talking about making the individual operational systems in the practice, how do you go about that? That seems like so much to take on. And sometimes it sometimes even feels like you think about all these things and then, you know, now there's this other thing, especially if you're trained as a dentist, we haven't gone to business school and those are not things that really come up to us ahead of time. And sometimes it's a little bit, you know, trial by fire.
Yeah, 100%. And that's tough. I will say, and I've said this before, Alex and I are so in awe and respectful of dentists that have done this on their own.
Right.
Because it is such a huge lift and it's so impressive. I mean, if Alex and I are both working 70 hours a week, well, that's 140 hours a week, right? And we've got each other.
It's
right?
a so, second so, job, especially if you don't even know the basics.
It truly is. So I always say, when we talk, especially to like the dentist coming out of residency or even in ASDA meetings, look, you spend $400,000+ on your dental education.
Mm-hmm.
Why not go to the local community college and spend an extra $3,500 and get your finance 101, your accounting 101, your marketing 101, and your management 101. Spend a year going to classes
kind of on the side
and just getting a basic, that is the best investment you could possibly make, because then now we're talking the same language. Now, okay. When your accountant talks about EBITDA, you're not looking it up going, what is this? What? Or pretending, you know, be like, ah, EBITDA, yes.
Earnings before
SEO, as we just learned.
Earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization.
We're going to have a quiz at the end, Shweta. So don't
That's right. That's right.
My internet connection's not good, actually.
Oh, blame it on the internet. That's classic millennial move.
That is. Holy moly. Do you want to talk about branding? So we have, you know, obviously we have a pretty big contingent of young dentists in CADS. Everyone's on social media these days. It's a constant,
it's the new battle. LinkedIn.
It is. Yes. It's the new LinkedIn. Everyone's making an Instagram reel or a story, and that's just how it goes. TikTok, right and left. Talk about, you know, branding that, you know, you might have as your firm's branding, but then you've got individuals, associates in your practice that are, you know, some of them really live off of creating their own personal brands and images, and they want their patients to connect with that. So, A, is that okay? Does it take away from the Kids Tooth Team brand at all? And B, you know, is it okay? And does it enhance your practice in any way? Or does it, you know, is it a good or a bad thing? Tell me your feelings.
Yeah, this is a cool question, because we do some work over in the UK, in London, in the dental field. And this is like essentially exclusively how they market over there, is personal branding. Like, that is how dentists build themselves up, build their practices up, build everything. It's all personal branding over there. All of the ones that aren't involved with the NHS, the national, their version of Medicaid, right? The fee-for-service dentists that are going out and really forging a new path in dentistry over there, that's how it works. And over here, it's almost like we're behind them, which is the exact opposite in almost every other facet of the dental industry.
Right.
But over here, for the most part, it's the companies doing the marketing and the branding, and we're building everything around the practice. Now, for a practice like ours, that can almost be beneficial, because what we saw with Kids Tooth Team is when we made it Alex focused and Alex centric, patients want to see her. And when they come in, they want to talk to Dr. Alex. And so when she left on maternity leave and we put a replacement doctor in there, we saw a massive drop in revenue and patient experience and all that. And it wasn't, the team was all the same. The doctor was great. It's just they weren't.
It's just not Dr. Alex.
Dr. Alex, and like, it was actually kind of disheartening, because like, she's like, hey, like, you all are moms. Like, do I not get a maternity leave?
Where's the understanding?
That's not the way that works. So I think over here, especially in GP, as it continues to get more competitive, we're going to see more and more of that. And by the way, if you're young and you're not doing that, I think you're crazy, right? Because it is more so about the personal connection now, as this becomes more and more of a customer service oriented business. I would say we're not in the business of dentistry. We're in the customer service industry that happens to be conducting dentistry, right? And so creating that personal brand and that connection in a highly competitive market is everything. It's like chefs now, right? Mm-hmm. McDonald's advertises based on behalf of McDonald's. Chef Jose Andres, he advertises and does all of his stuff about Chef Jose Andres. It doesn't matter where he goes. People are going to follow him. And I think that we'll see that more and more in the dental industry. And by the way, why not? It's like, I think people know that dentists are people too. And you guys have lives outside of just dentistry. So the other interesting thing, what people want to see, is not the dental practice. It's not the dental team. It's who you are. It's what you do. It's your dogs, right? It's where you go walking after a long day. It's for Alex, what kind of wine she drinks, right? That's the stuff people want to see. And that's what they make the connection with.
How do you not get lost in the sauce then, if everyone is coming out with TikTok reels and telling you what a cavity is and what a filling is going to be like? You know, how is a patient gonna just process this volume of information. I'm sure you could like look up dentist on TikTok, and I'm sure you will get so many like dental influencers. And not everyone necessarily is creating like an Instagram brand or a TikTok brand to be an influencer per se.
And that's a great, it's a great distinction because organic social media, i.e. your TikTok videos, your Instagram that shows about your personal life, that doesn't generate new patients. That generates patient loyalty, right? So you're not gonna we have a doctor who we partner with who has like over one video has over 1 million views. And you know how many new patients have come in from
How
that?
many?
Zero. Literally zero, right? Because it, but guess how many of our patients in that one location have seen that video and go, "Oh, I know that guy. He's my doctor. I love him. I'm going back to him." Right? 4,000, right? So that is, you're creating community, you're creating that connection, you're creating that that genuine retention with your existing patients. You're creating stickiness for you and your brand. Yeah. So it's not about attracting. It's not, you don't have to become viral. You can just, you know, hey, in your practice, have a link to sign up on Instagram and connect organically with the community. That's the best way to use that for sure.
How do you like talk about a digital presence? How do you recommend like dentists navigate social media without like dealing with that overwhelm?
Man, yeah. So here's the dirty little secret. Anybody who's doing it really well pays people to do it, or they just spend so much of their time doing it that they're
I mean, some
not
of these
doing
are
the
very like
industry.
professionally done.
Yeah,
They look very
most of them
good.
are. Yeah. Spoiler alert, so are ours. We have a social media person. Alex and I do absolutely none of that. And matter of fact, like you can't get me far enough. I don't have Instagram or Facebook on my phone. Right. And Alex still, even like with a professional doing this stuff, refuses to do that
And
personal.
it's a lot to take on mentally to
Ridiculous.
be that
It's,
connected all the time.
yeah. Well, it's not to mention like studies are coming out, obviously, really deleterious to your mental health at all ages.
I'm
So,
sure.
yeah, hire someone, like spend the extra $1,000 a month or whatever, unless you really enjoy doing it, in which case, good on you. But other than that, hire somebody who can follow these trends and who knows what
What's
songs are
going
trending
on?
so they can post for you, right? That's, but that should be, again, part of your overall marketing strategy. And it should be, in my opinion, one of the smallest pieces of it if you're in already in business.
So I guess this leads perfectly into my next question. A big part of a digital presence is those Google reviews.
Dun dun dun,
I
Google review.
know. Talk about mental health. How I mean, it's a love-hate relationship with Google reviews, and how seriously do you take them, especially when you're trying to establish yourself in the community, and it's going to affect your practice's reputation if you don't have good Google reviews to show patients. So tell me a little bit about how you've managed that, how you guys approach that over at Kids Tooth Team and Alkin.
They're everything. They really are. And it's for better or worse, the consumer has a tremendous amount of power now in today's digital age. We actually have leaned into it and now utilize it, or always, I guess not now, always have utilized it as not only a marketing tool, but as a management tool. So we have internal metrics that here's where we expect our team to be. And if we drop below 4.9 stars at any of our locations, our hair is on fire and we're scrambling. And it's in our DNA. When we get a bad review, I think the first thing for most dentists is to say, "Oh, what the hell with those people," right? Or, "You can't win them
You get
all," or, you know,
defensive.
insert platitude here, right? And what we have, what has really driven excellence in our team and in our business is when we get a bad review, the first thing we do is go, "What did we do wrong? Where did we screw up? How
Is
could
that a
we have
team
done
effort? Is it like we're
better?"
checking in with everyone who interacted with that patient and going through the
appointment. We're listening to the recorded calls, right? We're going back and reviewing camera footage if we have to. We're we're doing everything we can to see.
Big Alkin is watching.
And eye in the sky is watching all of us, right? No, and you know, like literally, like you see sometimes, like, okay, well, the wait time there was 20 minutes. Why were they waiting 20 minutes?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right? So all of these different metrics to say, what could we have done better? Right. Mm-hmm. Now, are there, we've got between all of our locations, I can't even tell, I should know this metric, but none of our locations have below a 4.9 rating on Google. It's all organic. We don't mm-hmm. use sites to drive it because we want the team knowing that we are also measuring them on that. Mm-hmm. But
so they're not like inflated.
We respond to, and we also, we use it to make ourselves better.
Well, so speaking of responding to, I've, you know, there's many like organizations, companies that are engaging with negative reviews, and, you know, and they're like, this is what happened. And this is, we don't think you're a good fit here. And it's airing out their dirty laundry for, you know, the whole public to see. How do you guys navigate that? If you do get, you know, a dreaded 2 or 3 star review, are you responding to them?
We've got 1 star reviews. It's there's.
I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah, no. We do, and we're very proud of our reviews, but we also take our lumps, and some of them are just ridiculous, right? But all of them, you have to respond to with respect and empathy.
And you're responding on that Google form? Are you contacting them separately? Like
both. Yeah. I mean, like, hey, there's still reviews that we get where Alex calls them herself and says, what could we have done better? What do we do wrong? Or, mm-hmm. you know, something along those lines. But you have to respond to them. And people judge your company based on your response more than they do the actual reviews.
Mm-hmm. It's,
if
mm-hmm.
you go, you guys know the doctor, who is it? I think he's out in Georgia or somewhere. And he responds to the 1 star reviews and just blows them up.
Oh, I've seen stuff like this. And that's what I was kind of referencing before. I'm like, oh my goodness. It's
yeah,
hard
and like in
watch.
The back of our head, we're all thinking like, yeah, you go. And then, you know, it's funny at the time, but then you look at it deeper and you're like, well, that's
oh no,
like, really overdone and insensitive. And in some cases, mm-hmm. he's sliding their income level or their income bracket, mm-hmm. right? It's like, mm-hmm. okay, well, that's a really dickhead thing to do, especially right. by mm-hmm. a dentist, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so you have to be careful. And for us, it's always a respectful, empathetic tone saying, we acknowledge that you feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing everything we can to get better. We're not perfect. And mm-hmm. there's always room for us to improve.
I like that. And it's very short and sweet, but you still feel hurt.
There is no benefit in going anywhere past that. Not,
yeah.
Well, actually, you showed up late, and here's why. So number one, that's a HIPAA violation. So enjoy your $25,000 fine if they ever decide to get nasty with that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, then a third-party patient who's looking at it is going to go, well, God, this doctor is airing their dirty laundry. I don't want to go there because if we get in a tip.
What if I do something? Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they're going to air my dirty laundry out. But if you look at them and go, wow, this doctor like got on personally and said, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. And we don't always say you're sorry. You don't have to apologize. But more than anything, we hear and acknowledge you. We mm-hmm. see you.
And
right?
showing and that you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, hearing and
we're paying attention to this stuff.
Now, one really amazing thing that Alcan does and Kids Tooth Team does is all the community engagement and outreach. And so I really want you to tell me about the outreach strategies that you guys have employed, especially in and around Austin. And what kind of relationship does that allow Kids Tooth Team and Alcan to like have with their community and engage in that way, which is different than like engaging on the internet or engaging via social media?
Totally. Yeah. And that's, we enjoy it so much. And it is actually one of our core values is it takes a village, mm-hmm. right? And we're all here and we're very fortunate that we're all here. Top 0.001% on planet Earth is mm-hmm. what we all are as owners and purveyors or dentists in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there we do owe something back to our communities, right? And to the folks that have allowed us to do this. So especially for us, like dealing with kids is the easiest thing in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have so much fun and take so much enjoyment out of giving back to the community. And in return, right? Guess what? The community gives back to you, and it's just a virtuous cycle, and it just makes everything so much easier. So it's a big part of what we do, is not just community engagement from a marketing standpoint, but from a truly philanthropic standpoint, right? Because it's that genuine giving back that the team sees, right? And it's like, it's easy to look at Alex and I go, oh, you know, these dentists, and they're just doing it for themselves and more money. And it's like, okay, well, no, when we put our money where our mouth is and we've financed the vast majority of our own 501c3's operating budget. And to date, we've donated over $700,000 in free dental care to kids in our community.
Wow.
Like, no, that's us giving back. And patients see that, and our partner doctors see that and know that we are genuine about that. Right.
Is that something that partner doctors are also doing, like in their, I know you guys have locations outside of Texas, or is this something that's just kind of central to Kids Tooth Team here?
No, 100%. Like it's our partner doctor, one of them out in Arizona, he donates his time for Special Olympics, right? And is very involved on the board of the Special Olympics. One of our partner doctors up in Michigan her husband's a GP. And so they'll open up their office on a Sunday and they'll do comprehensive full mouth cases on developmentally disabled adults, right? Where typically pediatrics dentists can't cover that, and they get lost in the fray because most GPs won't do it, right? And donate 100% of the case, including the anesthesia case. Okay. So even the partners that we work with, the anesthesiologists.
It really is a value that...
Yeah, they also it's funny, birds of a feather, right? So they are also donating time and donating their resources and providing free cases to the community. So it's an amazing ecosystem that's created when you become part of something like that.
Yeah, and we can definitely see that here in Austin working with Alex at CADS.
It does mean a lot to us, for sure. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I want to kind of scale down and talk about maybe just a single doctor practice, and not necessarily Alcan, but using your experience and, you know, first starting at a single location and now you've got all these offices, how can a new practice stand out in a saturated dental market? And I know we talked about location being one of them, but is there anything else that stood out to you in your career?
Yeah. And again, that's a tough one. I will go back to the most important thing is location. And if you decide to enter a saturated market, make sure, number one, that you have a really unique value proposition, that it's not like, well, we do really good dentistry. Well, you know, in the public's mind, that really doesn't matter because they couldn't tell you what a good composite versus a bad composite looks like. Right. So doing good dentistry is table stakes. It's what kind of patient experience are you offering? Are you providing them with, you know, community engagement in the form of like, I go to, you know, Mint Dentistry. Well, only exclusive people go there. Like, you go there, I go there.
Okay.
Right. Are you providing them the opportunity to be a part of a herd? Right. That kind of thing. That's one strategy. Are you the lowest cost provider? Porter's Five Forces, right? Go read that book, 200 pages of some of the greatest business advice on planet Earth. When it comes to marketing. So yeah, that's, you know, there's so many things you can do. Have a great marketing strategy, have a lot of capital set aside for the first couple of years of marketing. $50,000 a year or more is what it's typically going to take now if you're competing in a saturated market. And have that all hashed out and be ready for the long haul.
To anticipating that really ahead of time.
Yeah, exactly.
We talked about dentistry being almost a like concierge service now, in terms of, we're talking a lot about, we're focused about the patient experience, like the wait times. It's not, we're not trying to have people sit in our waiting rooms for 30 minutes just to be seen. How are you balancing customer service and clinical care? Because sometimes things happen, we can't account for everything. But you know, what's worked at Alcan?
Well, I'll turn the question back on you. Why aren't they directly related?
I think they are. I definitely think they are in my experience as well. But I also think when you don't have good systems in place, then things implode. And
Yeah.
I think that becomes very evident when you know something does run, you do run behind with a patient, or you don't have an operatory to seat someone, you know.
That's and therein lies the balance, right? And having the systems in place. And even by the way, with a bunch of systems in place and everything that we have, guess what? It's still people. And there's a biological element to this that can go wrong and does go wrong, and you are going to run behind. And so what's your recovery plan for that? How do you treat the patients when you do run behind? What's your plan to get caught back up? Is everybody in a really crummy mood when they're behind? And so that then obviously rubs off on the patient. Not only are now you running late, but they're having a miserable patient experience, right? Typically, like two or three things need to go really wrong to screw up a dental visit. So make sure if you're running behind, everybody knows here's the protocol for when we fall behind. We've got stacks of $5 gift cards at the front desk. We run more than 10 minutes behind, you better believe, and some parents looking grumpy, they're getting a $5 gift card. It's not me getting
Bribery,
it.
bribery.
Yeah,
Alex said it was
100%.
going to be to the ice cream shop, so
We're
we're like
gonna
just
get
keeping
in.
it in-house.
We're gonna get into that ice cream plan in just
Where's
a
your
minute.
fluoridated ice cream, Tim?
There you go. Hold on. Hold on. Okay, let's talk about like just the ultimate compliment any dental practice or dentist could get, which is a referral. I think a lot of the CADS members that we've talked to during this whole process say that is ultimately one of the biggest compliments they can get is when one of their colleagues sends a patient or sends their own children to their office. So, what kind of roles do referrals play in y'all's model, and how important are they?
Yeah, referrals should be 50% of your new patient flow.
Ooh, there's a firm number. How'd you come
Yeah,
up with that?
50% or more of your new patient flow.
Okay.
And that number's arrived at simply by looking at the average cost of patient acquisition in a moderately competitive market. And if 25% of your new patients are coming from referrals, that means you are spending roughly 33% more than I am on new patient acquisition. Right? So it's a numbers game.
I see.
Now, it's also that's the cold hard business answer. The more esoteric answer is, look, if you're getting more referrals, that means you're doing a good job. And if you're not getting referrals, that means
What are we
that something is
doing?
probably broken in your customer experience, your patient experience. So,
You guys nurture relationships with other doctors or other, you know, not in Kids Tooth team or the Alcan team. How do you make those connections and make them long lasting?
yeah, it's tough because it requires, I believe, and this is something that we could still do better at as Kids Tooth Team. And at Alcan in general, is it takes doctor-to-doctor interactions to really develop those deep relationships. Our team can drop cookies off to their team and vice versa.
I'm still waiting for my gift card, Tim.
it's the deeper connections. And my God, you only have so much time, right? I mean, like Alex and I are doing all this stuff, and it's hard to make time for dinner, but you have to do it. It's just part of the game. And by the way, you find out that you have a lot in common with these folks, and some lead to friendships, some lead to, being acquaintances. But either way, it's just you have to have that network.
It's important.
Yeah.
Relationships are important.
Yeah. And then of course the other stuff, that still has to happen. The gift baskets and the cookies and all of that fun stuff.
Oh yeah. Oh
I
yeah.
got
Glad you threw
here.
that
Here's the so I knew that we had landed in Texas when with the I think the first second year we were here, we received a gift from a local orthodontist. Guess what it was? It was a
in. Is it like
custom, you could
Tito's?
never guess because, well, maybe it because you're both in Texas, you could guess. It was a custom Kids Tooth Team Glock.
Ooh, you're
There we go.
Kids Tooth Team Blue, engraved with our little tooth cowboy, Kids Tooth Team logo on the side. We got a freaking gun.
See, I thought it would be like Tito's or something, since that's from
Austin. Yeah, I don't think you're gonna find that in the 4 imprint catalog. You know, here's your Yeti. Just kidding.
Just kidding.
Yeah, when I go over to England and talk to those folks, you know, they all ask, like, Texas really like, and I'm like, it's exactly like it is in the movies.
There you go.
Sometimes I'm like, I don't see how they got this, and then I see it, and I'm like, actually, that makes perfect
sense. Yeah, stereotypes exist for a reason.
Okay, let's reflect on what we just talked about. Let's talk about branding lessons or social media, digital presence. What's a mistake you've made? What's a lesson you've learned? How did you pivot?
For social media, I honestly still think we're making it, Sarah.
You're still making a mistake?
Yeah, I think Alex and I are making a mistake in the fact that we don't expose more of our personal lives and give, you know, engage in with that community in the manner in which they want to be engaged.
Mm-hmm. And do you attribute that mistake as in wanting to keep just a tiny bit of privacy, or what's the reasoning?
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said that wasn't a part of it. Probably for me, this is just the grumpy, you know, old guy coming into the picture, like a disdain for, you know, the scripted social media culture. Like, I've been roped into like a couple of TikTok dances, and it makes me like violently physically ill afterwards.
I'll definitely be scouring the internet for those now that you've said it.
You haven't met the investigative reporter sides of us, so.
You can see the scowl in my face hidden behind a light smile. Hey, that's something that also I think we've just come to acknowledge that we're probably never going to get good at. And so we've got to get better at certain other things as well. And that's okay. And like, we all have the strengths and weaknesses, and that's just one we're going to have to work around.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about it before it goes away. I'm going to be honest. I did accuse Alex of this ice cream shop idea being a pipeline. Into new patients.
So when referrals don't work, you guys.
When it breaks down, open an ice cream store so that you can get like I call it the cavity train. It's coming in.
Well, we've been in Butte 5 years and we've treated all the cavities.
Yeah. Right?
Like we're at like 60% market share.
So you got to make new ones is what I'm saying.
New ones, right?
And yeah. Like,
yeah. But take besides lobbying against fluoride in the water, you know, what else are you going to do?
Yeah, well, we got to find
the creamer, ice creamery, or getting gift cards to Kids Tooth Team.
That's
Kids
right.
Tooth Team, and vice versa. I love it, Tim.
So what's your favorite?
Total cop out on this is like, look, as pediatric dentists, they always say, if you're going to give your kid something sweet, ice cream is one of the better things, at least not taffy or, you know, gummy bears. And but one of the flavors that I want to create is taffy peanut brittle gummy bear. So...
There you go. Toppings.
Is that a filling?
No.
Add a new crown? Go ahead.
With extra fluoride. Don't forget the fluoride.
We actually wonder how again, we're a part of our community, and this is in the community that we live in, was our first practice. Mm-hmm. So we're anticipating that people will have a sense of humor about it and also just be really happy to have
it's great.
Ice cream on Main Street. But who knows? We could be on the news and, you know... One of these expose.
I fully think you should be ready for that.
And then you'll take all these sound bites out of context
from this podcast.
100%.
That's very funny.
And she told us that you were already doing your whole like MBA process on the different types of ice cream and the different
ice cream sommeliers.
Yes, your ice cream. And I was like, of course you are. Absolutely. Of course you are. So I expect that Shweta and I will be invited to the opening.
100%.
We're very good at giving
feedback. Opening, absolutely.
And this is like a very unpaid boost to this Buta ice cream.
Yeah, Buta ice cream shop.
Buta ice cream shop is coming soon to Main Street.
Coming soon, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
This is the segment that everyone looks forward to hearing. We call it What the Suck. It's our PG.
Thank you for laughing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for laughing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this has been just the most, I would say, soup to nuts journey you can have as a business of what the two of you have created together. This is really just it's basically like a textbook, business textbook example.
Yeah.
So What is your biggest suck? What has sucked the most in this 5 to 7 year process that you've been going through? And how did you overcome it?
Besides all of the typical startup stuff, poor cash flow, making bad decisions, picking the wrong software and then having to go back and redo it all, making the wrong hires, like that's all, I think, universal. Every business owner goes through all of that. I think for Alex and I, the tough thing is that we have this vision of what Alcan will become. And one of our core values is always happy, never satisfied. Meaning we're always aware that we're incredibly fortunate to be where we're at, but we always know that we can do more. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is kind of like its own prison because, and she always asks me, it's like, well, where do we stop? And, I kind of have to be the one to tell her, like, it doesn't stop. You never get to that peak and then go, okay, well, we're finished, right? There's always the next iteration. We always want to see it grow and evolve. And that's the long and the short. And I think this is would apply to even a single location. Like, there's never static in the life of an entrepreneur. You never get somewhere and maintain.
We're good.
You're either growing or you're shrinking, right? And so that psychologically becomes pretty difficult, especially when you talk about the suck. So I always love it. I did a lot of mountain climbing when I lived in Colorado and grew up doing that. And what you learn to do was embrace the suck. And Alex kind of jokes about it, like, okay, I've learned to embrace the suck. You're the guy sitting there saying, I wish this would suck more.
You did say you were divergent.
yeah, exactly. So, but even with me, you want to talk about the suck, like, yeah, I love the suck, but it does, like, you realize that this is it, right?
Yeah.
There's no end spot. This is just the normal. This is what you will do from now until forever. The end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
We can't end on that note. That's
no, so... no, we're not that. We got better stuff. No. We definitely.
Such a downer.
No, we're not ending there. Last question. You know, as a mountain climber, back country kind of person, you've got very limited space in that backpack, and you have one book, or maybe, let's put a podcast in there, or if you could take one person with you. Let's leave the audience with a tangible that they have to read this one thing or listen to this one thing. It's just shaped your life and your pathway, and you could not recommend it more. Go.
You guys asked me to think about this, and I've had 2 weeks to think about it, and it's an unfair question, number one. So I'm going to lobby my formal complaint right now.
Okay.
Noted.
Noted.
I would say at this point, but the answer is going to be different for me than it is for most of your listeners because I have the business background. So I'm not going to say something like Porter's Five Forces or Radical Candor or any of these business related books. Still, I think one of the most impactful books in my life is a very simple one. It's How to Win Friends and Influence People.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And it's the lessons in it are so incredibly simple. Mm-hmm. And it's not even sales. It's not being smarmy. It's just like genuinely being a good person and wanting to help and do good around others. And like it applies to every aspect of life. So that would be my current answer. It will change tomorrow, it'll change in a week, because I
We'll
didn't
take
recall
it.
another book, but that's what I would say.
We'll take it. And what's your favorite ice cream flavor?
Oh man, Alex and I were trying to answer this the other day and we couldn't. No, here's what I will say. Alex said vanilla, and that was almost the cause of a divorce. Like, what psychopath goes into an ice cream
It's no
store and
toffee
orders
peanut butter brittle.
vanilla? Like, that's the most dentist answer I've ever heard in my life. Like, vanilla, really? Not like triple chocolate fudge with caramel and no. So yeah, I would say I would probably go with like one flavor cookie dough.
Cookie dough.
Okay.
Would probably be mine.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. How about you guys? This is market research now.
It is. I talked to Alex about being up in the Northwest and having just extreme, they have huckleberry, everything. So it's like their native berry up there. So I'm kind of a huckleberry berry kind of person, raspberry, that's my jam.
Okay. Hey.
I like a coffee,
Oh,
or I like a
okay.
strawberry if it's done right.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes strawberry can taste really artificial, but
Interestingly enough, strawberry has been ruined for us because in this journey we've learned that strawberry is the least expensive ice cream to produce, has the highest profit margin. So now anytime you go into an ice cream store, you're like, I'm not buying strawberry, they're just making
okay. No. Oh
No,
my
no,
goodness.
no.
All right, coffee
Well,
and huckleberry we'll have for the grand opening. Well,
thank
huckleberry is
you.
pretty obscure, maybe not that, but definitely some kind of a coffee ice cream.
I'll take a raspberry.
There you go. Okay, we can do
I'll take it.
that.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining us. Your insights on culture, branding, leadership, and the evolving landscape of dentistry were not only practical, but incredibly inspiring. From navigating team and outpatient experience, you've shown us that marketing yourself goes far beyond social media. It's about how you lead, how you serve, and how you show up every single day. To our listeners, if you found value in today's episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review, and share this with a friend or colleague. And be sure to check out Kids Tooth Team and see how Tim and his team are truly doing dentistry differently. Thanks again, Tim, and thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.